Have you been told you don't fit in? The way you live isn't right? You don't look the right way, you don't act the right way, you don't love the right people, you don't believe the right thing? Do you feel the pull of spirituality deep within you and long for a place where you can express it, but keep running into places that want to put you into a box, turn you into another member of their cookie-cutter community where everybody looks the same, everybody lives the same, everybody talks the same, everybody sits in neat little rows, and nobody asks any questions? Welcome. You found a home, because this is the Christ and Light Podcast. And at Christ and Light, we celebrate your diversity. We understand the truth that everybody and everything was created wholly good, absolutely complete and loved, and that each one of us is a bearer of God. Join us now as we discuss the implications of that in our lives, as we explore ways to live out the truth that all of us are Christ events, called to shine forth in the world. Everybody, and welcome to episode 33 of the Christ and Light 2 podcast. And we have, I think, just a thrilling topic today that I'm still not sure what it is, but I'm sure it will evolve out of the course of our conversation. I had something of a crazy week last week, as those of you who are regular listeners to the program know. I have a couple of small businesses, but one of them is inspecting properties on largely pre-foreclosures and insurance claims, and that happens each month very intensely from about the 22nd through the 28th, including preparation and recovery time. And then Sunday, my colleague Jeffrey Montoya was preaching at Unitarian Universalist Church West here in Milwaukee, so after I recorded our 10 o'clock Blog Talk radio program Sunday morning, I went over to be a part of the congregation there, and at 5 p.m. I was in Chicago to hear the Reverend Juby Dutcher preach at the church she serves, the Church of Jesus Christ Reconciler, which is at 1500 West Elmdale in Chicago, and they have Eucharist every Sunday night at 5. I'm trying to remember what day it was. And not surprisingly, I came back and yesterday felt pretty much like I'd been rode hard and put up wet, and spent the day doing some reading and relaxing. My wife worked Sunday, which is unusual for her, and she works this coming Saturday, which is unusual for her. So she had yesterday and today off, and we were able to spend a couple days off together, which is very nice and doesn't often happen. And one of the things, as I tried to get caught up over the last couple days, in terms of what's going on in the world, that struck me, really, has to do somewhat with my experience at Unitarian Universalist West, which is a fine congregation. I'm not going to be critical of them at all. But they reminded me, in many ways, of a lot of communities of faith that tend to be populated by people who are more educated than the average puppy, tend to earn more money than the average puppy, and so have a certain set of desires that they want in their spiritual practice. And I would say, you know, that the Unitarians are not alone in this. The Episcopalians, by and large, tend to fall into that demographic, but they don't fall into the sort of thing that I'm about to describe. I think a number of New Thought churches definitely fall in to this category in their various forms. There's something like 27 or 28 different kinds of New Thought, so it's hardly a monolithic bunch. But they, too, tend to have more levels of education than the average Joe or Jane does. And so I think they definitely are a part of this group I'm going to talk about. And I'd like to compare and contrast them to what's going inside the Roman Catholic Church right now with the hierarchy in that Pope Benedict is essentially trying to turn back the clock and repress about the only group inside that church that's regularly doing actual theological work. And that would be nuns. The median age or average age of a nun in the Roman Catholic Church is in her mid-70s. And why it is that the Vatican finds it necessary to go after people in their mid-70s to punish them is a little, well, it's indicative of a certain pathology, let's just be honest. There are some groups of nuns who are younger and tend to be more conservative on the whole. They have been created by the Vatican to be more conservative on the whole and fight against the nuns who have been serving quite literally for decades, since before Vatican II. And that's an interesting topic in and of itself, how it is that one group of women would allow themselves to be used to oppress another group of women and not recognize that what was happening is a little bit beyond me. It smacks of being paid off and bought out and a kind of lack of integrity that I find startling among people who are supposed to be religious sisters. Turns out that the people I'm going to call the real nuns, the nuns that have been around for 4 and 5 decades, even 3 and 4 and 5 decades, the nuns that were around before Vatican II, came through the changes of Vatican II, came out the other side and started implementing those changes, that went through the process where the Vatican decided that the nuns who were serving as superiors of their congregations and school teachers needed to be better educated so that Catholic schools could compete on a par with public schools, and that seems like a good and wonderful thing. And what they didn't realize, this group of misogynist males, probably because they were busy twiddling altar boys, is that when you educate somebody, they tend to think for themselves. And the Vatican finds that undesirable, and I'm going to suggest to you right now that conservatives of all stripes find that undesirable, and that is precisely why there is a war against public education in this country, attempts to privatize it, attempts to turn it into a for-profit venture, because education as a for-profit venture is doomed to failure. They want to keep the masses dumb and compliant. For those of you who are young conservatives, you need to wake up and smell the coffee on this. You're being manipulated. Anyway, you're probably thinking to yourself, what in the world could Unitarian Universalists, New Thought folk, and the Vatican's repression of nuns have in common? And the answer is quite a bit. But we're going to have to take a little journey to get there. So I hope you got your traveling shoes on. The question really becomes, what are we after in church or in our spiritual practice? Are we after right thinking? Are we after having our brains stimulated? Are we after truth in a concrete fashion? And in this way, it's interesting that generally progressive congregations have a lot in common with generally conservative congregations in that they want to, rather than expose themselves to a free flow of information, restrict what's coming in. So the erudite, well-to-do, well-educated people want to go to what purports to be a spiritual institution and receive information. They want a lecture. They want to operate out of their head, not out of their heart. The Vatican and traditional Catholicism is much the same. The Catholic Church realized long ago that if it were to allow the common person exposure to the scriptures, to admit to them that they, in fact, could be exposed to divinity, to transcendence, to God, however you understand that they could be exposed to that and be able to interpret it themselves. The church, Catholic Church, realized it would lose control. And so it said, you know, we're the true possessors of the truth. We have the truth. We have it all bottled up. You really aren't able to expose yourself to any kind of spiritual truth or spiritual revelation without us there to interpret it for you. And in fact, our interpretation is at least as important as the content of the revelation itself. We are the gatekeepers. And so, they came up with the magisterium. The magisterium would tell the people what they were to believe. And the people were expected to see the wisdom of that and fall lockstep into alignment and not worry themselves about it anymore. Both the erudite, progressive, well-educated, well-to-do people and the conservative powers that be in the Vatican don't want you to respond from your heart. I should say that a little differently. The conservative powers that be in the Vatican do not want you to respond from your heart. Because your heart will reveal that what they're trying to tell your head doesn't make any sense. In the erudite, well-to-do, well-educated congregations, they don't want to respond from their heart because they're scared out of their wits about going there. And so sermons become educational sessions. Worship takes on the character of a performance. The church I was at last Sunday, for God's sakes, had held latecomers at the door until after the initial call to worship, after the prelude and the call to worship. The prelude wasn't even a prelude, but that's another story. I blogged about it. It'll appear later this week. They held people at the door waiting for a break in the action to let them in, as if we were at the theater or a symphony or something. That's regimenting something so that it can't possibly touch your heart. That's controlling all the variables. That's keeping the kids out because they might make noise, although it's not called a crying room in the Protestant context. It is in the Catholic context, and it isn't any different. It's saying those creatures that might impact our hearts, cute little babies, are dangerous to order, and we need to keep them away. Now, we could ask, who is it that needs to be afraid of a cute little baby. But since I don't really have an answer for that, I guess there's no point in asking the question. It is interesting, at least rhetorically. Particularly since, in the one context, what we're garnering is information, and in the second context, what we're garnering is just crap repeated by rote that's already been decided decades ago. Why are we there? But you see, the Vatican's let the nuns out of the box, and they said you need to get yourself educated. Now, they had admittedly probably pretty selfish notions and reasons and motivations for that. They said, well, we can compete better and get more students and raise more money if we get our nuns edumacated. And we need to get their superiors edumacated so that they can be conversant with the rank and file nuns. And then the nuns went and got educated and started to respond from the heart to the suffering of the world, as women are wont to do. And the Vatican lost control. You see, I don't quite understand who it is that purports to be a leader or a teacher of any sort and can't challenge or can't tolerate a question. It's usually, quite frankly, small-minded people who aren't too sure of what they have to say. I had briefly a working association with a fellow on Facebook who claims to be a teacher in about 15 different traditions. Not really, just maybe two or three. And he'd say outlandish things, and I would say, well, on Facebook, how could that be? And one day he just blew up at me, and I realized what was happening is we have a guy who's making stuff up as he goes and recognizes that if he's challenged, he doesn't know how to defend the absurd things he's saying, which means he doesn't have much spiritual authority or experience. And he's really a sham. He's making money off of unsuspecting people. Does the Vatican know what they're doing? Well, I think the Vatican knows what they were doing about 200 years ago and assumes that the same things fly today. Not unlike the educational institutions, the academy, if you will, the Vatican has isolated itself inside its walls and never really journeys out in anything but fear. It's the old monastic tradition of leaving the monastery and the group gathering to send you out and pray for your safe return. That made sense in the Middle Ages. It doesn't really make sense anymore, although it's still done. And the Vatican and the Magisterium have that kind of medieval practice that remains with them. When we leave here, we enter into dangerous situations. And I'm going to say, we enter into dangerous situations because, precisely because, we will be challenged to respond from our heart. And they still believe that in the public's opinion at large, within the general populace, they have the kind of authority they used to have. So if they stomp their feet and scream and shout, people will say, oh yes, we have to obey you. Yes, Father, yes, Father. The same as the progressive, erudite, well-educated people who seek to control every corner of what happens on Sunday morning so that nothing pokes through that might cause them to move from an intellectual, cognitive perspective to a spiritual, feeling, emotive perspective. Because that's messy. It's kind of like having sex. There's some cleanup involved afterwards. At least if it's any good. I was going to say something about altar boys. But you see, a passionless pseudo-spirituality can never touch the heart. Love has made many a person do many a thing that at the time they set out to do it, it seemed impossible. An interesting thought, or a focus on compliance, never inspired anyone. So what I don't understand, and admittedly, I don't put up with a whole lot of nonsense in my world. I spent enough years doing that I don't anymore, is why in the world would a woman stay in the Catholic Church? I understand why you'd stay if you were conservative. And there's a lot of organizations that have established themselves as what's officially called extra-canonical. That means they are a Catholic organization, but they are not a Catholic organization under the control of the official church structure. In other words, they're a group of Catholics doing something. The Vatican can't shut them down. The Vatican can't oppress them. And this group of old codgers, locked up inside the Vatican, don't see, and or don't understand if they do see, the reality that what they're going to do is force these people to step outside of their authority and set up parallel organizations. Rather than work for compromise, work for change, they're just going to oppress these people and assume that they'll either fall into line or be eliminated. And I suppose there's some merit in being an extra-canonical organization, if you have been from the start, but has it ever occurred to any of these people, if they just left, if they just went on strike, what might happen? I met a gentleman last week, and he was telling me about his experience as a Catholic and also a member of a non-denominational congregation. He was telling me about one of his priest friends. He grew up Catholic, and I would say he was probably late 40s, early 50s, probably more or less my age. And there's a priest, this is in Milwaukee, this priest that he knows serves three, well, actually between five and seven different congregations, but only three that are really still active in any way, but obviously it's very difficult to run between the three. So the first Sunday they're at, you know, St. Helga's, the second Sunday they're at St. Betty's, and the third Sunday they're at St. Brunhilde's. These priests are being asked to provide pastoral care for more people than they possibly can. What would happen if they said, I'm done? I can't do this. I have an ethical dilemma, and I can no longer pretend everything's all right. That may be the push and the shove we're coming to, but let's get back to those progressive, intellectual, well-educated, well-to-do people. And, in fact, the rest of the church, the Protestant church. You're struggling to sit today alive. And yet, in visiting this one church and looking through their bulletin and watching what they did as an outsider, which I haven't had the privilege of doing for quite a while, I can tell them exactly what they're doing wrong. It doesn't take a brain scientist as my mother used to say, it doesn't take a brain surgeon. It doesn't take a neurosurgeon to understand the messages that are being sent, whether or not those are the messages they intend to send. And the messages aren't welcoming. And then I came across this article about pastors losing their faith and these little committees of atheists that are happy to greet them. Now, to me, atheism, not in the sense of being non-theistic, but in the sense of believing there's no spirituality, is equivalent to tying your truck to consumerism, and it's a pretty bankrupt system. However, I couldn't help but wonder how many of those pastors didn't lose their faith in God, or if you will, in the universe, or in divinity, or whatever your name for it is, but rather lost their faith in the institution of the church, in the doctrine and the dogma. That they recognized that their whole career had been an exercise in missing the point, supporting the structure without touching the heart of it. Again, a cognitive exercise in what should be a highly affective process. Funny, isn't it? That except for that small group of people who really believe that the best thing you can do is learn all your facts, dot the I's, cross the T's, and do well on a test about God and Jesus, and that makes them happy and giddy and giggly and as close to orgasm as they've probably ever come in their life, while the rest of us are saying, you know, I'm struggling here. I find daily life hard. I keep doing all these things, thinking that they'll make me happy, and I'm never happy for more than a few days or a few weeks. I thought taking this new job would make me happy. I thought taking this new partner would make me happy. I thought buying this new car would make me happy. Getting this new house would make me happy. Moving to this new neighborhood would make me happy. I thought a new washer-dryer would really get my rocks off. And it did right after I got all those things until about 6 months later, and then they weren't new anymore. And I started to realize that they really hadn't done the trick. And the old school response is, well, just believe in God, put your nose to the plow, and you'll be happy. Except we tried that shit for a long time, and it didn't make us happy either. And the people inside the church in all its forms are saying, I want certainty and I want information, while they rapidly move their hands from their ears to their eyes and hum real loud, occasionally covering their mouths, because you can hum with your hands over your mouth. And then they look around and go, why isn't anybody coming in? Why doesn't anybody like this shit? Well, it's an exercise in missing the point. Western culture discourages feeling. And while I'm not for a moment endorsing that we just feel and don't think, if we have a choice between feeling and not thinking and thinking and not feeling, recognizing that my own tendency is for the latter, I'm not sure that's the best choice. If we're ever to be content, if we're ever to be happy, we need to be integrated. We need not to withdraw into circles of sameness. We need not to park either our minds or our hearts at the door. And we also need not to get caught up in those people who tell us that we're wrong for wanting what we want. We need to just wave and say, okay, and just go about our business and leave them where they are. People have the right to be idiots. Who are we to argue them out of their stupidity? But if a church organization says to you, I don't want you sitting up here because you have a baby with you, or I don't have much use for you because you have a vagina, and you find that offensive, trust your heart. Get to stepping. Vote with your feet. Get out! When a group of men gather together and say, we need to get these women in line, you have a choice between either taking off your shoes, getting yourself pregnant, and resolving to live your life in the kitchen, or you need to tell them to go screw each other, which, you know, they're probably doing anyway, so it shouldn't offend them too much. Not that there's anything wrong with that, unless you're one of those people who says it's wrong. And while we're on it, I saw an old Catholic priest. Now, I don't know if I've ever gone into detail about this, but essentially there are several brands of Catholicism called Old Catholicism. I was initially ordained as an old Catholic priest out of this group in Utrecht that is recognized as credible. Well, back in the middle of the 19th century, some fellows went kind of nuts and ordained just about everybody they could get their hands on. And as a result, there have been unscrupulous bishops and are unscrupulous bishops in the United States who will ordain whoever they can get their hands on or whoever pays them enough money. And the old Catholic Church in the United States has an amazingly high criminal record rate amongst their clergy and bishops, especially felonies. Anyway, one of the features of the old Catholic Church is it most often ordains gay and or married priests. And I saw one of these knuckleheads the other day on Facebook banging the abortion drum. The anti-abortion drum, I should say. Now, isn't it just a little ridiculous that someone who rightfully left the Roman Catholic Church because they rejected him for something about his body that he does with his body because of who he is and his sexual orientation. In other words, they rejected him because he was gay. But he still buys into the good old boys club of Rome and presumes to tell women what to do with their bodies. There's a name for that. It's hypocrisy. It's also idiocy. But there's more than enough idiots to go around in old Catholic contexts, so that in and of itself doesn't surprise me. However, it does point out why it's important to think as well as feel. We have to at least be able to look at what we're feeling and what we're saying and ask ourselves, does it make sense? And we need to, and is it consistent? And we need to be well-equipped enough, educated enough, to have the tools at our disposal to make that judgment. One of the problems of creating a culture in an institution where the only people who are seen as educated and knowledgeable are the people at the top of the heap is that when they die, what do you have left? A bunch of yes men who perpetuate the same nonsense. And regardless of their claims of perfection, are driving what once was a fine and enviable institution straight into the ground. Not unlike what the well-educated, erudite, liberal Protestants are doing, just at a much more frantic pace. Religion is dead. Long live spirituality. Until next time, I'm Bishop Craig Berglund. I wish you God's rich blessings. Namaste. We thank you for joining us for this Christ and Light program. We're glad you decided to join us. Christ in Light offers a variety of programming and teachings available throughout the week. The Christ in Light podcast uploads weekly, usually on Monday mornings, and discusses a contemporary spiritual issue or teaching from a Christ in Light perspective. Christ in Light has a program on Blog Talk Radio on Wednesday mornings and Sunday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central, 9 Mountain, and 8 Pacific. On Wednesdays, our program looks at spiritual issues with a sense of humor, even when those issues are extremely serious. On Sunday mornings, we offer a weekly Sunday morning message based on a Christ in Light interpretation of the Revised Common Lectionary Scripture readings for that day. All of our internet programming is available at no cost to you. To learn more, visit our ChristInLight.org website or access the podcast and the Blog Talk Radio program at no charge to you on iTunes. We also write an engaged spirituality blog, which is available on the ChristInLight.org website. We blog Monday through Friday, and also on each morning, we upload a spiritual teaching for the day, 7 days a week. There is a Christ in Light gathering in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. To learn more about that gathering, visit the Christ in Light website. This program is copyright 2011 and 2012 by the Ecumenical Franciscans of the Renewal. All rights are reserved. For permission to reprint or use audio from this program, please write ChristInLight@gmail.com. We thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Bishop Craig Berglund. I wish you God's rich blessings. Namaste.